Ready to rock and roll?
I am ready.
All right. So apparently we are doing an episode of Hacker Public Radio, which is, I believe, run by Klaatu and a bunch of other people. And we've been tasked with discussing Ohio Linux Fest and focusing a little bit more on the sort of geek aspects of what Ohio Linux Fest is about. And just I think the good format to start with would be to introduce who we are and why we're here, and then talk a little bit about the schedule for Ohio Linux Fest and what's on the plate, and then talk about how that can apply to technical people that have a sort of geeky interest. So any objections to that?
No, that sounds good.
All right, cool. Well, I'll start it off by saying my name is Greg Bainline. I am a person who's been using Linux since the initial release of Linux back in 1994, and I've been played with SLS, Slackware, pretty much every distribution up the chain until it became impossible to play with all of them. I run a company in Cleveland, Ohio called N2Net, which is based on Linux technology and uses a lot of Linux technology to conduct what we do. I've been involved with Ohio Linux Fest for about ever since its beginning, actually, which is, I think, we're in 7 years now, Paul?
We are on, I believe this will be year seven, yeah.
7 years. And so that's a little bit about me. I go by the hacker name of Damon, which comes from my old BBS days way back in the old school days of freaking and BBSs, if you guys actually remember modems.
Using something called a modem, yes.
Yes, modems.
Modulator, demodulator.
That's right.
So, go ahead.
When 1200 baud was considered high speed.
Yeah, because there were slower modems, 110 baud all the way up to, God forbid, 300 baud was a big deal. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm proud to say that my first modem was actually an acoustic coupler, like in the movie War Games. So
I'm not quite that far back. I'm Paul Ferris, and I will be making an announcement sometime, possibly at Ohio Linux Fest, but probably shortly thereafter, as to where my new engagement is. And in my background is mostly systems and architecture and infrastructure, and deploying Linux in enterprise-class environments. I tend to be an automation freak in nature and focus upon process, people, and technology and the best way to make those things work together in the culture of your company. So my background with Linux, I started playing with it at the very end of 1993, early 94. I started supporting it on Internet Relay Chat for a really long time, probably 95, 92, somewhere around 99. And began writing journalistic type exposés, articles, and so on, and got to manage my favorite website of the time, linuxtoday.com. Since then, that's when I really got into enterprise stuff, and lately have been doing a lot with IBM product suite running on top of Linux, WebSphere, and Portal, and Commerce, and MQ, and things like that. But my passion has always been free software and Linux, and just in general the way that they're transforming our business landscape and the types of solutions that you can now have for free you couldn't buy, 4 or 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It was impossible to even, get quality this high. So to me it's a great time to be in IT and a great time to be a geek. Just so many things can go on that you couldn't easily do before.
I think what's particularly interesting is that there are so many opportunities, as you pointed out. There are so many different tracks of interest. You've got people that are getting highly into kernel development drivers or driver development. You've got people that are getting into application development, and there's something for everyone.
Yeah, but my father and some of his friends, he's a minister, now use Linux for the desktop. It's not unheard of. It used to be something people snickered at, but it's it's actually happening now with these netbooks. People are actually using Linux a lot more for their desktop solution. There's embedded work, as you point out. Linux is in all kinds of things that you'd never guess, TiVos, and I have a TomTom here. I'm sitting in my car while we do this talk, and it's a GPS that comes with an embedded copy of Linux, and on and on and on, and it's solving all kinds of problems without people really knowing that it's there. And I believe it was an article by Nick Petrelli a long time ago who said that as Linux took over markets and stuff, people wouldn't even know because it would be like electricity or something, you know, that where you don't think about, you know, what's under the hood kind of thing. It's hidden. But,
right. I don't even think about the fact that my Sony TV runs Linux. It just works.
Yeah. And
just
so
works.
One of the nice things segueing into the Ohio Linux thing is all these different types of geek culture type people, the people that are into Linux for the different reasons, are going to be showing up and converging on Columbus, Ohio. And what I really love about the event typically is just the diversity of people, the types of people you get to meet. And everybody's typically pretty social. And if you say, hey, what are you doing? They'll tell you, you know, I'm into whatever it is, you know, whether it's systems management or you know, kernel development or whatever. Apache, you know, you typically are it's very interesting, and there's oftentimes if there's a talk going on about something you care about or a birds of a feather session or whatever, if you're into Linux and you're a geek, there's something for you at this event, which is always amazing to me. It's gone from something so small, you know, just getting all the user groups together initially, to something that's basically probably one of the best events in America if you want to go to a community event.
Well, I would definitely agree. I think one question that I have and one thing I think we should probably discuss is what is a geek? What constitutes a geek? Because in a historical sense, especially from the old school perspective, geeks were considered such as people in the Revenge of the Nerds. So what does a current geek, what's the meaning of the current word geek?
I think years ago it was a term of scorn, you know, that like in Revenge of the Nerds is perfect. It is the quintessential, let's paint these people as social misfits. And today when somebody calls you a geek, they mean it as, you know, it's something almost a badge of honor, you know. I mean, I think that the misperception is that everyone who's a geek has got really bad social skills or you know, whatever. I think that was the original thing they painted your dad on. Now I think people do understand that, yeah, there is a really common trait where people love computers or technology more than they like interfacing with people, but that doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing if you've made a really cool living or you're making the world a better place with software, which is, I think, how it's perceived now. You're one of these computer artist type people, and you're doing something that the average Joe on the populace can't do, which is, you know, actually make these things sing and do the things that everyone wishes they could do with them.
I think that's an important point. I think that, you know, at least when I think of the term geek, I think of somebody that I have a lot of respect for, somebody who has taken the time to learn the technology and can bend the technology and make technology do what it is that they're looking to do. I mean, I don't at all look at it as a negative connotation anymore, as it used to have. In fact, I'm kind of proud to say that I am a geek in a lot of different areas.
In the episode of Dilbert where his mom is, it's a flashback scene, and he's talking, the his mom has taken him to the doctor, and the doctor is about to reveal to his mother that he's going to be an engineer, you know, and it starts out with, you know, with this description of somebody who's capable of, you know, doing all these things with technology, but unfortunately is, you know, unable to converse with human beings normally or whatever. And his mom's like, will he be able to lead a normal life? And he's like, no, he'll be an engineer. And she's like, oh, no. You know, I think that is, it's funny now, but it used to be painful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that. I mean, I see that all the time with customers. Customers, you know, they look to me to solve a lot of problems for them, and you know that, that sort of badge of geek is what. Look at Geek Squad. Geek Squad has made a business out of actually you know taking that term to the next level.
It's not some other thing. They could have said IT professional or something crazy like that. They expect the guy to look kind of nerdy and be driving around in a Volkswagen Beetle that's been painted black and white like a police car. I mean, seriously, it's definitely gone to another level of almost you know, like a basketball team kind of thing. Maybe not quite as much on the groupie front, but definitely on the respect front. You've got that word for sure, right? I can't think of anyone calling me a geek in recent time and not feeling, you know, that they were trying to pay me a high compliment. But the interesting thing is they almost inevitably follow it up with, I don't mean this in a bad way.
You know? Yeah.
Like we're not past that yet. It's still got something to say like that. And I remember Linux Fest about 4 years back when it was in the convention center, and there was a modeling convention going on at the same time. Do you remember this?
Yeah, the juxtaposition of really, really cute models versus the crowd at Ohio Linux Fest was just an interesting. It was a very interesting dynamic.
Amazing contrast.
Yeah.
I mean, you take two totally diametrically opposed people on the planet. Here you've got a whole bunch of guys that are wearing T-shirts, and the essence of what they're saying is, I am not how I look. I'm everything about what I can do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And on the other side, you've got the models.
And standing next to people that are like, they're all veneer, you know. And I think it was Mike Messi, who's the founder of the event, roughly. I mean, he's standing there, and he says, I was in line for some food, and this mother's daughter, you know, there's a mother and daughter model combination. She was looking at one of the guys, you know, from Ohio Linux Fest, and their mom, like, grabbed her and pulled her out of the way, like, don't look over there.
You'll get
infected. Don't be like that. You'll get infected. It was perfect, but it was exactly what we're talking about in terms of being a geek. And I thought it was funny as all get out.
Well, one of the things I think that's particularly interesting is that last night Beth made an announcement on the Linux Link Tech Show, which is another podcast out there, that a pair of the people showing up for one of the early Penguin tracks, which is the Podcasters and Listeners Unite panel that's happening on Friday, there is two people that are going to be getting married at Linux Fest.
Yeah, I heard.
Which, that's geeky. I mean, that's pushing the envelope for me. I'm congratulating.
Why would you go to Hawaii for something like that? The fact that they've chosen Ohio Linux Fest says volumes.
It does. From their perspective, they said that Ohio Linux Fest is one of the best events of the year for them, and that they figured that they might as well memorialize it. So
get something myself called the Post Ohio Linux Fest Blues, which is essentially me coming down at the event and thinking, God, I got to wait another year.
Yeah, I typically call that like an extended hangover. But.
Oh, it's terrible. Well, because it is typically, but that doesn't reason for it. I've had to cut back on that, Greg.
It'll be
Diet Coke for me, buddy.
We're supposed to be the older and more responsible group, and the youngsters are supposed to be carrying on the banner of that. But
oh my God!
Now, Linux has always had a kernel beer message, so.
Yeah, that's
part
the
of
after
culture.
Party, and that's definitely worth mentioning, too. I don't think I've ever seen geeks wrap source code before or since, you know, going to the after party at Ohio Linux Fest.
Yeah.
And who's running it this year?
That's a really good question. Unfortunately, the guys from Nauticon, Froggy and Tiger, couldn't make it out because they've got a prior commitment, so they've been running it for the past couple of years. Now Nauticon's another conference that it's based in Cleveland, Ohio, and is definitely one of those things that I would call a fringe geeky event that gets into some definitely interesting perspectives. But I believe that we've got a DJ scheduled, and we're going to be working with Google on the after party, and there'll be some you know, your typical after party fare. A little bit of food, a little bit of drinks, a little bit of dancing, and some music, and plenty of what I've heard John Todd refer to from Digium as the hallway track, which of course is, in my opinion, some of the most interesting discussions that happen at conferences are those that happen outside of the confines of the conference rooms and outside of the presentations. And, you know, you just happen to be, oh, geez, hey, aren't you the guy that wrote that wrote Linux pipes or Unix pipes? Yes, I'm Doug McElroy. So
he'll be there this year, which is amazing. There isn't an OS I can think of except for VMS, digital, that I learned a long time ago, that does not encompass the theory of, you know, pipe on the command line.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're going to have the guy that invented it is extremely exciting to me.
Absolutely.
So
I'm looking forward to that. Well, I think one of the things I wanted to kind of correct, not correct, but to just set the record straight, Klaatu had done a podcast earlier this week, and he had mentioned that he wanted to get people coming on Friday because he said that the Friday stuff was going to be free. And that he wasn't sure about the Saturday stuff. But I just wanted to set the record straight that Ohio Linux Fest has always had a mission of being accessible to the widest group of people. So we don't have any age restrictions at all. It would be a comfortable environment to bring kids or students.
Saturday's free and Friday that's that you pay for. That's the thing.
There are certain classes. Well, that's the interesting thing. Actually, in looking at the schedule this year, it looks like it's actually expanded out to be 3 days. We've finally broken that barrier. And there is a full set of activities actually happening on Friday. There is the Ohio Linux Fest University Tutorials track, which is being put on by LOPSA. There's a Linux Basics class, which is running concurrently with that, which is being handled by, I think, Free Geek Columbus, which is essentially an introduction to Linux, and you build your own computer, and when you walk out of there, you have a PC to walk out. Those are all classes that you have to sign up for in advance at the website www.ohiolinux.org and choose the highest level package. I can't remember the name off my head. Then there is also concurrently a hackathon running from 9 to 11, which is basically various open source projects getting together to bug squash and do code development. And of course, projects need to register for that. And then the early Penguins track is going from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., and there's some interesting stuff going on there. As well as Xenos, which is a network monitoring system, is sponsoring what they call a Xenos Community Day, which is no-cost training day for system administrators who are interested in learning about Xenos, which actually, by the way, is essentially their introduction to Xenos class, which I think they charge about $3,000 for at other locations. So they're pretty much giving that away for free.
Wow.
Yeah, it's if you are a system administrator and you need to manage a network, that's a value. I've actually made it a point to get that information out to a lot of people because that's it's a heck of a product, and two, it's a great value to be able to show up and do that for free. There's an Oracle Install Fest starting at 5 p.m. if you are really interested in databases and want to see what Oracle on Linux looks for. Essentially, it says bring your hardware and we'll help you get it set up in this hands-on session. It's kind of like the old-school Linux users group Install Fest. And then, of course, at 8 o'clock over at Barley's Brewing Company, we've got the kickoff party, which is being sponsored by Xenos this year again. Xenos really came through in a big way this year. I'm surprised and I'm delighted that they did. But they'll be providing free beer and free food to those that are registered under the supporter and higher packages. So. Otherwise, just come out and hang out. You get everybody that starts showing up on Friday or has been there for the classes. Barley's Basement is one of those little dungeons that's perfect for this kind of thing, and they've got great ales as well. traditional style ales. So that's Friday. I mean, there's a lot going on Friday that you wouldn't, you know, we've not had a class, we've traditionally made it a one-day conference, and now it's kind of expanded out to 3 days this year.
Amazing.
And, yeah, all that is actually being held at the Hyatt Regency, actually. So Friday's activities are all happening at the Hyatt Regency with the pre-party or kickoff party happening over at Barley's. But then on Saturday's when the big conference, the big conference day begins. And so we've got Sean Powers, if he's well, I just saw some stuff on Facebook that he went into the hospital because he was having what he felt like indigestion and pains, but last I knew, the doctor had cleared him to travel and said he just to go home, and he didn't have any heart attack or anything like that. So Sean Powers is supposed to be keynoting in the morning from 8:40 to 9:35, and then we break into four different tracks to talk about all sorts of various things. I mean, there's all sorts of great stuff on the schedule. There's getting started in free and open source is a talk about just what it says. There's Decade of IBM at Linux, or Linux at IBM, which is on the open source solution stage. We've got the Mackenzie Morgan is actually talking about, he's got a talk entitled Sysadmin's Rosetta Stone. We've got Peter Salas, who's another a definite old schooler, is going to be talking about the importance of 1969, since the theme for the conference is 40 years of Unix, obviously. So there's going to be a lot of focus on talking about the development of Unix and how it applies to Linux. And then there's more that you can do on Saturday than you could actually physically attend. I mean, I don't see any of the talks that I see listed here. I don't see anything that I would say I have no interest in that. I see I see the opposite problem. There's so much going. There's so many good talks that I see a lot of talks that there's no way that I could see them all.
I'm typically on sensory overload. I mean, I'll be straight. I do the human equivalent or the real world equivalent to channel surfing sometimes. I'll go in one room, take as much as I can take in for a minute, go into another because I literally, there's two talks that I want to see going on at the same time. So it's difficult. I've got to pick one and then settle down on it, you know, and eventually I do. But it's rough.
Yeah.
So a lot going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We've got Patrick,
what's Sunday all about?
Well, Sunday. Let's wrap up Saturday first. So obviously, during the day, we've got a whole. Again, the best thing to do is to go to www.ohiolinux.org and check out the actual schedule link and see what's on there. But we're kind of closing down with our keynote for that day, which is being done by Douglas McElroy, or I think it's McElroy.
McElroy, I think how you say it.
And his keynote's starting at 7 p.m. and I am really excited to see. He's talking from 7 to 8:30, and then after that the after party kicks off at Hyatt. And of course the after party is always a lot of fun. That's when everybody's pretty much consumed as much possible information as they can for the day, and now it's a question of sharing it and talking to people about finding out what you missed and all that. So that's what Saturday looks like. Essentially, most people, I mean, if you're like me, you're on a caffeine-induced high the whole day, and by the time Saturday night rolls around, there's no possibility of sleep happening. So Sunday is a workshop that's being handled called Diversity in Open Source, and that's from 11 to 6 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency again. And essentially, that was spearheaded by Beth Lynn Eicher, who is our con chair this year, and who once again has basically done everything she possibly can to make the conference go on, and it wouldn't have gone on without her. There's going to be a lot of discussion about attracting people into open source that are coming from different backgrounds, and how to basically not really, you don't have to like the people you're working with, but how to get along with them. So it kind of says how to attract, it's kind of about how to attract diverse people to open source projects and how to not degrade other people or let others do it and how to recognize biases so that you can better lead others in your project.
Is this gender-based stuff or is this technology-based stuff? Like, say, somebody's really into Microsoft products or...
The at the top it says age, gender, sexuality, career, religion, size, race, disability, ethnicity. So as far as I know, this is one of the first ones. I think there was a small version of this that they did at scale this year that Beth was really motivated by, and so she worked with Moose and several other people to get this taken care of, and so.
Okay.
So that's what's happening on Sunday, and of course there's always plenty of people hanging around the hotel after people check out and all sorts of things going on. So it's for this year it's a very full schedule. I don't want to downplay that because there's a lot going on. So
I'm pumped. Coming up like a freight train, and I wish I could have been more involved in the planning this year. I have had some pretty stiff career things going on for me, and things where I've really got to rethink why I'm here on this planet. And so the timing is very interesting to me. I'm going to be stopping something huge that I've been doing and starting something else that's going to be potentially bigger. And it's a great time to pause and really look around. And I can't think of a better bunch of people that I would want to be hanging around doing that with.
Yep. I mean, it's a fantastic opportunity to network with people, too, I mean, on that front.
Absolutely.
That's I think, something that's really important. A couple of things that I do want to highlight again. We really appreciate if you register in advance for the conference, but if you can't get registered by Friday, September 18th, don't worry. Come on down. And you can still get in. You can register at the door. If you can't buy, the packages. You can only buy some of the packages online, but that's not going to stop you from being able to donate a check or put something in the kitty. And again, this year we are actually a 501c3 organization, so anything that you donate is tax deductible. Yay! So.
Yes, sir.
That's a good thing, and again, it's free. So even if this is your first opportunity, you've never heard of it, you're thinking about it, just come on down. Come on down and see what it's like. It doesn't cost anything to get in the door. Obviously, we appreciate it if you want to kick in something to help cover the bills. I think that's also important for people to understand is that you usually get these two different types of people. The people that are we can't have any commercial aspects and. You've got the other side that says, we've got to have all commercial stuff. And I think we've managed to strike a good balance where we have sponsors and we give our sponsors the opportunity to get their message out to a wide group of people, system administrators, students, IT administrators, technology. There's a lot of hiring people that show up at Linux Fest if you're looking for opportunities for employment. But we give them the forum to actually be able to do that through the open source solution stage. And quite frankly, you'll see groups of people. You'll see a lot of different, and talking about the suits versus geeks argument, you'll see a lot of the suits over at the actual open source solution stage because that's where you're seeing open source companies actually talking about commercial products that they're deploying. And then you'll see a lot of the geeky T-shirt crowd over in the conferences, looking at things in depth like the Linux boot process or using Python. So I think we've managed to strike. There's something for everyone. I think is the key to take away from that. I mean, there's technical
I'm
talks.
I'm typically the only one at the event with the suit on. I have to say that, but the suits you're referring to are.
Yes.
Are the kinds of people that are just they're at IBM or HP or Sun. I've seen some pretty large vendors show up at this event, and the interesting thing to me is they're typically having every bit as much fun as the people that are very community oriented.
Right. I mean, It's funny, like you go to the IBM booth or the Novell booth or you go to the Oracle booth and you talk to these guys and they've got their whole business mentality. And I remember we've had to train some of our sponsors to say, look, you need to understand who you're talking to. I mean, we've done that over the years too, but I think that they've gotten it finally after, you know, several years, some of the, and they're starting to send the right people now and they're starting to get the right messages out to the group. It's actually really cool to see. And we're back again from a space perspective. Last year we actually had it split across two floors down on one end of the convention center. Well, we're back to where we were in 2007 and 2006, which is in front of the ballrooms, which is nice because that essentially means that, you know, in between all these conferences, you get to come out onto the exhibit floor and talk to the sponsors and the exhibitors. And the exhibitors are a mixture of commercial companies that provide open source solutions, but there's also software projects such as Fedora and other, you know, webcasters and podcasters that actually have booths there. And we have a lot of people that will actually be broadcasting from the show floor again this year. It's hard to... You know, you can't really encapsulate the experience in a radio show, no matter what you do. There's no possible way to do that. You just have to be there.
Yep. Big party. It's a great time.
Yeah, definitely so, come on down.
Hope to see you there.
Yeah. So do we have anything else to talk about?
I think that's said. No, definitely awk is always better than said because I can do anything you do in said with awk. And plus, I can add logic.
Here's a trivia question. What was the first PC processor and memory that you installed Linux on?
It was a 486DX33 with 8 megabytes of RAM.
Ah, so you actually had a math coprocessor. You
lucky dog. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I tried installing something like SCO, if I remember right. A friend of mine gave me a bootleg copy of SCO on a 286, and that was pain. I never got it to work the way it should. Just because SCO was very picky about hardware, whereas Linux was only slightly picky about hardware.
I remember
there were still a few things.
My first installation was off of five and a quarter floppies onto a 386 SX16. Actually, it was SLS.
Okay.
386 SX16. So I didn't even have a math coprocessor. The processor was running at 16 megahertz, and I had a whopping 4 megs of RAM. I was so excited at that time.
Yep.
Let's put it this way. At that point, once I got SLS up and running, eventually I was able to get X installed on the thing. But it took almost a week to get X compiled.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I mean, that's how, and now you can compile X in probably about 20 minutes on a modern PC. But
still freaking amazing amount of code. I love Ubuntu for everything like that. It's just, to me... The ease that they have made it, you know, and the polish on it. My parents run Ubuntu, and it's funny, they've done the last two upgrades themselves. So like they're running, you know, Intrepid Ibex, and it's just an incredible amount of just smooth, you know, I'm just amazed at how nice it looks.
You know what I heard. I heard a comment, or not actually heard, because technically it was an email, but there was a discussion on one of the news mailing lists, the Northeastern Ohio Open Source Society's mailing list, about whether or not you were a producer of software or a consumer of software. And I think one of the interesting topics that came out of that discussion is that originally when we started all this stuff back in the day, we all had to kind of produce software. We had to actually... you know, cross-compile stuff and port stuff over and, you know, figure out ways around to get stuff to compile from other systems. But as you pointed out with Ubuntu, we've moved from, you know, the sort of producer mentality now to the user mentality. And now we're consumers of the software. And I would agree with you. Ubuntu, I'm not sure I'd put anything else on a laptop or a PC if I was running Linux desktops. Yeah. I mean, I just as an example, my 7-year-old installed Ubuntu. And Ubuntu desktop. She installed Ubuntu desktop. I actually, one of these days, I have to get her to do it again, and I have to film it, because I told Jono Bacon that I would send him the video. I said this should be on YouTube. You should see exactly Ubuntu desktop, so easy a 7-year-old could install it. I mean, try to get them to install Windows. It's not going to happen.
My dad bought a cheap piece of, it was a refurb, like $125 desktop, IBM, okay, Lenovo, whatever. It's probably about a year ago, and he bought a brand new laser printer that's wireless and yada yada yada. And I said, can you get this stuff working? So I came over and installed. It came with XP already, and my mom has like one program, Windows based, that she wants to run. So I said, I'll split the hard drive. I'll stick it on one half. So, split the hard drive and configured Ubuntu and added the printer, and everything worked. And this was probably a half hour's worth of work. And so then rebooted it and went to configure the printer to work under Windows XP. And it was literally 2.5 hours later before the thing was finally up and working. And I had to go to websites and download drivers and all kinds of crazy stuff, and it wasn't nowhere near the seamless experience. And it says volumes. This is like an HP printer with an IBM desktop. That it took that much more effort to thing work. What it's saying to you is that the game is pretty much over on the ease of use front. I don't care what anybody says, they're not paying attention. That there's just it's a certain amount of time we're going to see. There's going to come a point where people are like, why are you killing yourself with all of this complexity? Because I don't think 7 is going to be easier. And I don't think that the game is all about, cramming it down people's throats. I think there's going to come a point where there's going to be a real serious, healthy debate about why do we see this other product that costs so much and is so much harder to set up and use.
Well, hands down
easier.
I have a very similar experience. My brother, does a lot of work for his business, and so a lot of the stuff that he does is online. And he was familiar and trained on Windows, but after like 7 or 8 times of installing, reinstalling Windows XP on one of his older PCs, I finally said, "Look, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore." So I threw. And this is a funny thing. I mean, he had been given a printer by somebody that you couldn't actually get the drivers for XP that would work, because the only drivers they had available, I think, were Windows 3.1 and or Windows 95 and 98 drivers, and you couldn't actually install them on XP. Anyways, long story short, I did. I slapped Ubuntu on that. And gave him Firefox, which is essentially 98% of what he needed, and Thunderbird and Firefox, gave him his email and his web browsing. It's all he needed to run his business.
The printer,
he plugged it in. It just found it. It just worked. Cups is gone. The drivers don't even exist for Windows XP, and yet the thing just, it's just like, yeah, okay. And so, I really, again, I think that it's just come, and not only that, with products like VirtualBox and Xen out there, and the ability to run Windows in a virtual session if you need access to Windows software, the whole argument. I mean, you really want the most stable core operating system for whatever platform you're on. You don't want to mess with virus protection and all that stuff. But if you need to access applications, I mean, VMware Server is essentially free, and VirtualBox is free, and Xen is free, and you can get all that stuff to run. And I mean, hey, Microsoft's even contributed Hyper-V extensions to the Linux kernel now. And I know a lot of people were contentious about that, but I mean, I think Linus said it best. He said, they're doing exactly what open source is about. They're contributing code to a product to make it work better. And so why should we deny them? Yeah, I mean, it's right. Microsoft, and a lot of people like to hate on Microsoft, but, we've set the...
There are signs that they are starting to understand that this is a development model that they want to tap into, and you can bet you that it'll be a matter of time, and you'll see a lot more. I mean, there's already a few things coming out of them that are under their shared license and all that, but it's just semantics in my eyes. I know that the license is more restrictive in some ways, but the fact that they're wanting to share their code with other people and get that collaborative spirit tells you that it's just the walls are falling. It's just a matter of how far. You know?
Well, that's exactly, that's exactly one of the things I tell clients. I say, look, open source has one of the benefits. With Microsoft or with Cisco or with any of the closed product development models, you're going to be looking at weeks, months, maybe years for fixes to products. Whereas with Linux, somebody's going to take a look at that, and I've seen fixes come across in open source projects such as Linux and Asterisk in hours and minutes in cases.
Yep.
I've seen stuff fixed in real time. I've actually been at AsterCon. I actually saw a bug came out in one of the releases of Asterisk, and I was actually there when the announcement was made. It came across somebody's pager or somebody's cell phone, and immediately I saw a couple of the core developers get together and had a patch out to IRC, International Relay Chat. They had a pass out to the channel in approximately 15 minutes or so. And this was a big deal. This is the kind of, this is the kind of development and open sort of transparency that really it makes the whole model just so attractive for anybody that's, you want to know what's in your software. You want to know what's running, and you want to know that if a company goes out of business, you can pick up and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's about 11:30, and I don't know about you, but I've run out of beer. So
I've got to get to bed.
So I think it's about time to sign off. Once again, this is Greg Bainline. I'm
Paul
one of the trustees of the Ohio Linux Fest, and Paul Ferris. And we're saying good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Hope to see you there. Bye.
See you then. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.